John Batchelor. This is the new John Batchelor Show, CBS Audio Network. I welcome Richard Epstein, Professor Richard Epstein, a senior fellow at the Hoover Institution, teaches law at NYU and the University of Chicago, writing most recently at Defining Ideas for the Hoover Institution, H.R. 5. This is not H.R. 1. This is H.R. 5. House and the presentation of this in, and Richard provides links. It's called, in general, the Equality Act, to prohibit discrimination on the basis of sex, gender, identity, and sexual orientation, and for other purposes. Of note, because Richard provides it in a link, I read the purpose of the Equality Act. It is the purpose of this act to expand as well as clarify, confirm, and create greater consistency in the protections and remedies against discrimination on the basis of all covered characteristics, and to provide guidance and notice to individuals, organizations, corporations, and agencies regarding their obligations under the law. Richard, there's nothing that's not admirable about the purpose of that. The puzzle I have, frequently asked question, is what has happened that it is necessary to update a protection that I thought was already in place from the 1960s? What is the presenting issue that means that it needs more articulation? Good evening to you.
You know, one, I think the first thing to note is that they're trying not to undo anything in the 1960s, but to extend in several dimensions what's going on. And the first of those dimensions are, what are the current forbidden grounds on which discrimination should be made? And the new two that they're talking about are sexual orientation and gender identity. Those are not in the statutes. They are in Title VII by virtue of the rather extraordinary decision of Justice Gorsuch in the Bostock case, where he read those things in against the history of uniform rejection of those habits. And they're basically uneasy about the fragile nature of that, and so they want to cover it. The second thing that they clearly want to cover is they want to expand the definition of what counts as a a public accommodation which is going to be subject to these various sorts of rules. Then the third thing that they do, less noticed, but there are many of them, is there has always been a kind of a general rule that if you start to look at things, the so-called Religious Restoration Act of 1993 or so, which was designed to limit the decision that the Supreme Court made in a case called Smith, where Justice Scalia wrongly, I think in the eyes of most people, held that any law that was neutral with respect to religion could be enforced against religious organizations, even if it had an enormous disparate impact. And that would include, quite literally, if it's a neutral law requiring everybody in the army to eat pork, you could make Jewish and Muslim people eat it as against their religious beliefs. It's not done commonly in practice, but that's what it says. And one of the things that happened back in the 1990s, most of the civil rights organizations were strongly in favor of the Religious Restoration Act and thought that this was unconscionable. That was because they were dealing with individuals like Smith, who was smoking peyote as part of his native religious rights. But now that it's been pleaded by corporations as a defense against various kinds of government actions, as in the contraceptive case, they want to make it very, very sure that they can essentially override the religious stuff by the anti-discrimination law, and therefore sort of undercut any religious protection that might otherwise be available against the operation of these acts. And then there are other individual things that are really hot button. I think in terms of gender identity, if you're talking about the way in which people are going to work in businesses, it's not a big deal right now. But if you're trying to talk about having boys self-declare themselves to be girls so that they could go into high school and college meets, there's just a huge battle over that particular issue. And there are many prominent feminists who are also strong defenders of the anti-discrimination law who think that this is the end of women's sports. And they certainly have more than a point, I think, in the international regime where they are not subject to all kinds of fads. The whole huge industry in sex testing and doping testing and so forth is all an effort to insist that biological distinctions really matter. And you could not run a professional Olympics if any guy can come in, basically, whether you're trying to figure out what the equivalent conversion rates is. World records for women are, roughly speaking, depending on the sport, records that are for 14 to 15-year-old boys. And so if you simply had that kind of a parity, and you could let the boys come in, all the women's sports would be over. And so many strong pro-female actions are in favor of getting rid of this act. And there's just a lot of tension about it. There are many people who believe that subdivisions of the statute are unconstitutional. We can be perfectly confident it won't be enacted in its present form. It may not even get through the House in its present form. And then what happens is anybody's guess. But as you can tell, I take a rather skeptical view of this, because I think most of these problems have worked themselves out pretty well, and that it's mainly political types who are exaggerating the differences, making everything into a civil rights dispute when it ought not to be. For example, evictions. The reason you evict people is they don't pay their rent. And there's an argument that, well, you're evicting more black people. It's not that you're using different rules. So that's a form of discrimination. And then you say that nobody has to pay their rent, at which point people who are quite solvent can strategically avoid rent paying. All of these issues have essentially come from the fact that any disparate outcome is treated as a function of discrimination, even if there's no official government act of any sort kind of description, which has created the imbalance in question. So perfect neutrality in the administration of these rules is no defense if it turns out that the outcome is perceived to be disparate, as it is in many, many cases.
I want to turn this conversation into two pieces, and the first piece is political. The second piece has to do with the baking of cakes, the masterpiece, a baking cake.
Yes.
The first part is about politics. You note in your reporting that after a short debate in the House, I'm reading, the act was passed on February 25th by a vote of 224 to 206, where all Democrats and only three Republicans voted for the bill. And now it goes to the Senate, I understand. But the puzzle here is, this looks like the Democratic Party moving as one in a gesture. Who is the audience for this, Richard? Where are they going with this? Who doubts in America that discrimination is bad business? Who doubts that?
Well, nobody doubts it, but it's one thing to say you don't want to discriminate, and it's another thing to say that somebody could tell you that you have discriminated when you haven't, and then tell you that the sanctions that they're going to be imposed. And so one of the things that's quite easy is you will see many firms say, we will take all sorts of public vows that we're not going to discriminate, say, on grounds of sexual orientation and so forth. And these same firms will be very leery of about a set of legal rules that will impose sanctions on them if they're found to discriminate. At that particular point, their own internal processes are only evidence. They're going to be subject to litigation. They're going to lose a lot of these cases. The statutes can easily be extended and to go haywire. So there's this constant tension between the sort of substantive positions that you agree with in practice and the unwillingness to have legal sanctions. And the progressives are exploiting this point by saying, if you believe it, then we should be able to impose it pretty much on everybody. Why are you afraid of this? Well, I know why I'm afraid of it, because regulations typically get out of hand. So they want to push this. And I disagree with John on one thing. I do not think that this is simply a kind of virtue signaling to their parties. They're not going to back down. They actually want this law to be put into place, and they want to enforce it. What's so interesting about it is they're prepared to make very powerful general changes in the anti-discrimination laws, the voting laws, any other law that you think about, on the basis of a rather thin majority. They will get the odd Republican vote, but it's otherwise it's on straight party lines. And in the end, I think that if you want major changes, you have to have the wisdom that did in 1964. You want to have a comfortable bipartisan majority before you force major changes on the nation. That is not the progressive position today. We don't know what Biden's position is with respect to this. So far, he hasn't given much signals, but he certainly hasn't put out the word, hey, guys, you've gone too much on this thing and that you have to hold back. So the politics are going to play out, and they're going to be really nasty, I think, as time starts to move on. In the Senate, it's even more complicated. The Republicans have all sorts of devices to slow things up. And if it turns out that Kamala Harris is not sitting in that chair, it's in a 50-50 deadlock, Lord knows what's up the sleeve of Mr. McConnell. He's really smart when it comes to these things. Schumer is no dope when it comes to this either. So they'll be battling it out. And all of us who are not, shall we say, privy to the intricacies of the Senate rules will be subject to surprise after surprise as we watch them play itself out. I don't think this legislation will pass, and I think it won't pass because people like Joe Manchin have essentially indicated they're not prepared to go the whole way on this, at which point it becomes 51-49 and Ms. Harris becomes essentially irrelevant. But, you know, I've been so wrong so often on so many political predictions that I'm much more comfortable as a lawyer telling you what I think about the soundness of the bill rather than about
it. All right, now we'll turn to Masterpiece Cake Shop, because that is another direction for the HR 5. Richard Epstein, mm-hmm. Professor Richard Epstein, a senior fellow at the Hoover Institution, teaches law at the University of Chicago and NYU. We're discussing a law that's an act that's before the House and the Senate. It's been passed by the House. It's before the Senate. But the courts weigh in on this matter as well. I'm John Batchelor. This is the new John Batchelor Show.